This is Betty returning with the second part of reading the News Gazette on Friday, May 15th. And in the local, it's an article said, "Judge to shut it down." I kind of mentioned that in the first half about a gym in St. Joseph, and this has more an explanation. And this is by Mary Schenck. A Champaign County judge has ordered that a gym in St. Joseph that reopened Thursday in violation of the governor's stay-at-home order be shut down. Champaign County Judge Tom DeFonis issued a temporary restraining order Thursday against D&K Fitness doing business as The Zone at 109 North Main Street. State's Attorney Julia Reitz, who sought the order on behalf of the Champaign County Public Health Department, said when a county sheriff's deputy served the order at the business at 3:45 p.m., there were about a dozen people working out there and not staying in 6 feet apart. DeFonis set a hearing for May 21st. Gyms and fitness centers are among the non-essential businesses that the governor has ordered closed to quell the spread of the coronavirus. The county's order says by operating the zone is significantly endangering the public health and welfare. Plaintiff will suffer irreparable injury unless this court issues an injunction because an outbreak would overwhelm the Department of Health and local hospitals' ability to treat patients of COVID-19. And would be detrimental to the public health of Champaign County, it said. The order said the harm to the gym is solely financial. Therefore, the balance of harm weighs in favor of granting an injunction to protect the residents of Champaign County, the order said. Along with the restraining order, a sheriff's deputy served the manager with an order of closure from the health department, which spells out the fitness center's rights. Signed by Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride, the order is effective through 5 p.m. May 29th. The temporary restraining order and the order of closure came after the health district asked the gym Wednesday to voluntarily comply with closure by hand-delivering to staff a cease and desist order. Reed said in the petition for the order that the gym owner's attorney had sent a letter dated May 6th to county authorities, received Monday, explicitly providing notice that the respondent intended to open effectively, giving local authorities time to get a court order. In a letter to Pride dated Wednesday, one of the gym owner's Greenville-based attorney, Eric Hyam, wrote that a cease and desist letter does not remotely arise to the requirements of statute, and that the gym did not intend to close absent a court order. Okay, going back to how the local cities are treating the seniors' graduation. This is Rantoul, Seniors Take a Bow, and this is by Dave Hinton in Rantoul. Lance Cloninger said he didn't know what to expect for graduation this year. He said he can look back and tell people he was part of one of the most unique graduation ceremonies held at Rantoul Township High School. Cloninger was one of the grads who walked across the stage to receive his diploma Thursday, the first of 3 days of graduation at Rantoul. There were no speeches, no choral numbers, no cheering, just Principal Todd Wilson reading off the graduates' names before they walked across stage, picked up the diplomas off a table, turned their tassel from right to left, and then headed to have their individual photos taken. "It's strange," Cloninger said. "I didn't really know what to expect, to be honest." He said he will have a story to tell. "I was there in 2020, he said. Cloninger was taken aback by the developments of the past few months and the quarantine that accompanied the COVID-19 pandemic. "I certainly wasn't expecting to have like a third of my senior year taken away from the coronavirus pandemic," he said. "I'm still kind of stunned by that a little bit, to be honest." Cloninger wasn't able to compete the track season for the Eagles and, like other students, had to finish his studies at home. Fellow grad Delma Cobb said she has kept busy during the quarantine. Cobb is working two jobs in addition to taking classes online. She works at Dunkin' Donuts and recently got a job at Combe Laboratories, where one of the products made is hand sanitizer. We're bringing in a lot of people, she said of Combe. I just got hired because they need more people. Otherwise, she said, it's been all right. I don't really like the fact we have to graduate separately because I wanted to graduate with everybody in my class. I always forget the mask part, too. This is in the local paper, and it's out of Springfield. It's called GOP Legislators Want Changes, and it's by Peter Hancock at news@capitalnewsillinois.com. Republicans in the General Assembly said Thursday that when lawmakers return to the Capitol next week, they intend to push for changes to Governor J.B. Pritzker's Restore Illinois plan for reopening the economy. I have heard members from both caucuses suggest this plan should be vetted and revised, Senate Minority Leader Bill Brady of Bloomington said in a letter to Senate President Don Harmon, Democrat Oak Park, that he released to the media. I also believe this should be done in a public setting, which can be undertaken using available technology and social distancing protocols when we convene in Springfield. Pritzker's plan divides the state into four broad regions and allows for the gradual reopening of businesses and public activities in five phases if they meet and sustain certain benchmarks for infection rates and hospital capacity over a 28-day period. The final full reopening phase would occur only after a COVID-19 vaccine or treatment is widely available, something that could take 1 year or more. As of May 1st, all of Illinois was in the second phase of that plan, which allows non-essential retail stores to accept online and phone orders for pickup or delivery. It also allows hospitals to resume elective surgeries and procedures. During a video news conference Thursday, a group of House Republicans argued that Pritzker's plan is still too restrictive and that progress toward a full reopening is too slow. One of the problems I have going from 3 to 4 is when you open up the business in 3, you have no child care for them, said Representative Mike Murphy, a Springfield Republican. I think this whole plan needs to be reevaluated. I don't see how these businesses can open up in phase 3 without viable child care. I also question why restaurants, once again, are part of phase 4, where in many other states they're already opening. We have over 30 counties that border states with restaurants open right now. Representative Avery Bourne, Republican Morrisonville, said she thinks the arrangements of the four regions is arbitrary, and that 3 of the 4 regions, all except the Northeast region, including Chicago, should already be in phase 3. Another article out of Springfield is Pritzker unveils new resources for jobless, and this is by Ben Orner. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Thursday announced new resources to help the hundreds of thousands of people unemployed in Illinois, unveiling on an online portal that will offer job training and connect job seekers with prospective employers. Get Hired Illinois is a one-stop shop for job seekers of all levels and backgrounds to access career training programs, virtual job fairs, and opportunities to connect with employers, the governor said. It's critical that our state do everything possible to help our residents get back to work, whether returning to positions that they once held or with employers who are seeking to hire, Pritzker said during his daily COVID-19 briefing from his Chicago home. The state says Get Hired currently features 60,000 available jobs and that more than 70 employers have committed to hosting virtual job fairs on the site. Starting June 1st, unemployed Illinoisans will also qualify for free, unlimited access to courses through Coursera, an online platform that offers thousands of courses and hundreds of specializations. Coursera will focus on training in the IT field, which is in high demand as workplaces operate remotely during the pandemic. After finishing online programs, participants can continue their studies at a local community college or university. Free access to Coursera will run through the end of the year. The Illinois Department of Employment Security has processed more than 1,076,000 unemployment claims since March 1st, Pritzker said, which is about six times as many claims as in the equivalent time period of the 2008-2009 Great Recession. More than 70,000 new Illinoisans applied for unemployment insurance last week, according to figures from the U.S. Department of Labor. The federal agency also reported that more than 750,000 Illinoisans renewed their unemployment claims last week. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 3,239 new cases of COVID-19 among 22,678 tests, for a positive rate of just over 14%. More than 500,000 Illinoisans have been tested, which is about 4% of the population, and 87,937 have tested positive. IDPH also reported 138 new deaths from the virus, bringing the state's total to 3,928. The number of cases that we're identifying is proportional to the number of tests, IDPH Director Dr. Ngozi Ezeki said. And we've increased our cases because we've increased the amount of testing we've done, and we hope to keep doing that. There were 4,473 people hospitalized with the disease in Illinois as of midnight, including 1,132 in intensive care and 689 on ventilators. On track for phase three. All four regions outlined by the governor's Restore Illinois reopening plan are on track to move into the next phase of reopening on May 29th, according to IDPH data, including a case positivity rate for each region of less than the 20% maximum. Every region is so far meeting all the metrics. Phase three, titled Recovery, allows offices, retail shops, barber shops, and salons to reopen to the public with safety precautions and limited capacity. Mandatory face coverings and social distancing will still remain, as well as a 10-person limit in social gatherings. Pritzker said that even if one county in a region does not meet IDPH metrics for moving into the next phase, that county would still be allowed if the region as a whole meets the metrics. There will be some areas that will be a bigger hotspot than another area within a region. But we didn't want to hold back a region because there's one hotspot, Pritzker said. This article is from National News. CDC releases edited reopening guidance. And it is from the Associated Press out of New York. U.S. health officials on Thursday released some of their long-delayed guidance that schools, businesses, and other organizations can use as states reopen from coronavirus shutdowns. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention posted six one-page decision tool documents that use traffic signs and other graphics to tell organizations what they should consider before reopening. The tools are for schools, workplaces, camps, child care centers, mass transit systems, and bars and restaurants. The CDC originally also authored a document for churches and other religious facilities, but that wasn't posted Thursday. The agency declined to say why. Early versions of the documents included detailed information for churches wanting to restart in-person services, with suggestions including maintaining distancing between parishioners and limiting the size of gatherings. The faith-related guidance was taken out after the White House raised concerns about the recommendations, according to government emails obtained by the Associated Press and a person inside the agency who didn't have permission to talk with reporters and spoke on condition of anonymity. On Thursday, a Trump administration official, also speaking on condition of anonymity, said there were concerns about the propriety of the government making specific dictates to places of worship. And Roger Severino, director of the Office for Civil Rights at the Department of Health and Human Services, said Protections against religious discriminations aren't suspended during an emergency. This means the federal government cannot single out religious conduct as somehow being more dangerous or worthy of scrutiny than comparable secular behavior. Now let's go on to the obituaries. The first one is Martin Dwayne Austin, 86 of Clinton, died at 10:20 a.m. Tuesday, May 12th at home. Private funeral services will be held today, which is Friday, at Calvert Funeral Home, 201 South Center Street, Clinton. The Reverend Aaron Stein and Pastor Jeff DeLofter will officiate. Burial will be in DeWitt Cemetery, DeWitt. Visitation will be private. Darla D. Bates, 77, of Tuscola, died at 5:25 a.m. Thursday, May 14th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Hillegross Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola. Lori B. Frick Brody, 39, of Tuscola, passed away Monday, May 11th, 2020, at her childhood home. A graveside funeral for Lori was held on May 13th in the Fairfield Cemetery in Newman. The family would like to thank the Tuscola community for their unwavering support of Lori over the last 4 years and the angels of the oncology department at Carle Hospital and Carle Clinic. A memorial fund has been set up at the Villa Grove State Bank for her children's education. Michael Lee Brookwalter, 56, of San Diego, California, formerly of Wellington, died Friday, May 8th. Cremation rites have been accorded for the Navy veteran, and no services will be held at this time. Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston, is in charge of arrangements. Emma Lou Dumhan, 86, of Westville, died at 1:45 p.m. Wednesday, May 13th, at home. Memorial services will be held at a later date. Robeson Chapel, 103 Douglas Street, Catlin, is in charge of arrangements. Mark Edward Ferris, 73, of Villa Grove, passed away at his home on Tuesday, May 12th. Online condolences may be offered at www.renner-wyckoffchapel.com. Beulah Newman, and her full name is Beulah Phillips Newman, 98, of Monticello, formerly of Urbana, passed away peacefully at 4:35 a.m. Wednesday, May 13th. At Piatt County Nursing Home, Monticello. Memorial contributions may be made to the Piatt County Nursing Home, Monticello, or to an organization of the donor's choice. Arrangements are being handled by Renner Wyckoff Chapel, Urbana. Private interment will be at Woodlawn Cemetery, Urbana, with the Reverends Corey Blackwell and Cheryl Palmer officiating. Condolences may be offered online at www.renner-wyckoffchapel.com. Susan Margaret Staten, 71, of Bloomington, formerly of Hoopston, died at 2:53 a.m. Wednesday, May 13th, at Presence St. Mary's Hospital in Kankakee. Due to the current health situation, a private family graveside service will be held at Flora Hill Cemetery in Hoopston. Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston, is in charge of arrangements. Miriam Webb, 52, of Danville, died at 7:01 p.m. Thursday, May 7th at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital, Park Ridge. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. Pastor Leo Davis will officiate. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. today, Friday, at the funeral home. Linda Weigel, 76, longtime resident of Mahomet, died at 12:33 p.m. Tuesday, May 12th at Bement Health Care Center. Condolences may be offered at www.owensfuneralhomes.com. See, that ends the obituaries for Friday, May 15th. So let's go to just a little highlights of the international history. On this date in 1862, President Abraham Lincoln signed an act establishing the Department of Agriculture. In 1954, the Fender Stratocaster guitar created by Leo Fender was officially released. So there's a couple of items from the international history and national history for this day. And the next article I'm going to read is on from the National News. It says, whistleblower warns House panel about lack of comprehensive plan. And this is by Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar and Richard Lardner. And it's from the Associated Press. And this is out of Washington, D.C. Despite White House claims, the U.S. still lacks a comprehensive battle plan against the coronavirus in critical areas, including masks, testing, treatments, and vaccines. Whistleblower Rick Bright warned Thursday in testimony before a House committee. Our window of opportunity is closing, he declared. The nation could face the darkest winter in modern history if the virus rebounds, the government vaccine scientist told lawmakers. Bright's appearance came after his ouster last month as head of a Health and Human Services biodefense agency, an action he alleges was a retaliation by the Trump administration. We still need a comprehensive plan, and everyone across the government and everyone in America needs to know what that plan is and what role they play, he told the House Energy and Commerce Committee. There are critical steps that we need to do to prepare. We do not still have enough personal protective equipment to manage our healthcare workers. We still do not have supply chains ramped up for the drugs and vaccines. And we still don't have plans in place for how we distribute those drugs and vaccines. We still do not have a comprehensive testing strategy. At the White House, President Donald Trump said Bright looked like an angry, disgruntled employee, and Bright's boss, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, said everything he is complaining about was achieved. So this is like somebody who was in a choir and is now trying to say he was a soloist back then, Azar added. Later, while touring a Pennsylvania medical equipment distributor, Trump said the U.S. is ramping up production of COVID-19-related items and that his goal is to produce everything America needs for ourselves and then export to the world, including medications. Bright spoke in measured tones and rarely raised his voice during 5 hours of questioning. He didn't question the fact that there's now an all-out effort financed by billions in taxpayer dollars to procure masks and other supplies, develop better tests and treatments, and discover an effective vaccine. His point was that those efforts aren't being fitted together in a coherent strategy that will get supplies and medicines to where they're most needed to protect people and prevent shortages and price gouging. Asked by Representative Joe Kennedy, Democrat, Massachusetts, if administration officials have prepared the country for the moment we are in and the months ahead, Bright responded, I think we have a lot of work to do to be prepared. Representative Frank Poloni, Democrat, New Jersey, asked if he should be concerned that Americans will have problems getting access to a vaccine when it's available. Bright responded, absolutely, sir. Bright, a career official, alleges he was removed as head of the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority after repeatedly warning higher-ups that the virus outbreak was going to be worse than the public was being led to believe. The next article is also a national article, and its chairman steps down amid FBI investigation. And this is out of the Associated Press in Washington. A Republican senator with access to some of the nation's top secrets became further entangled in a deepening FBI investigation as agents examining a well-timed sale of stocks during the coronavirus outbreak showed up at his home with a warrant to search his cell phones. Hours later, Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina stepped aside Thursday as chairman of the powerful Senate Intelligence Committee, calling it the best thing to do. Burr has denied wrongdoing. This is a distraction to the hard work of the committee and the members, and I think that the security of the country is too important to have a distraction, Burr said. He said he would serve out the remainder of his term, which ends in 2023. He is not running for re-election. The search warrant marked a dramatic escalation in the Justice Department's investigation into whether Burr exploited advanced information when he unloaded as much as 1.7 million in stocks in the days before the coronavirus caused markets to plummet. Such warrants require investigators to establish to a judge that probable cause exists to believe a crime has occurred. The warrant was confirmed by two people familiar with the matter, including a senior department official. They spoke on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to publicly discuss an ongoing investigation. Burr faces no public accusations by the government that he exploited inside information he received during briefings, but the search warrant immediately affected the standings inside Congress of the influential Republican who has earned bipartisan support for leading a congressional investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential campaign. News of the warrant also underscored the public scrutiny surrounding the stock market activities of multiple senators and their families around the same time. On Thursday, a spokesman for Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, said she was asked some basic questions by law enforcement about sales her husband made and voluntarily answered. Republican Senator Kelly Loeffler, a new lawmaker from Georgia, and her husband dumped substantial portions of their portfolio and bought new stocks around the time Congress was receiving briefings on the seriousness of the pandemic. Loeffler has said she had no involvement in the trades and said they were managed by a third-party advisor. A spokesman said Loeffler has forwarded documents to the Justice Department, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Senate Ethics Committee, establishing that she and her husband acted entirely appropriately and observed both the letter and the spirit of the law. In Burr's case, the search warrant was served on a lawyer for him, and FBI agents went to the senator's home in the Washington area to retrieve the cell phone, the Justice Department official said. The decision to obtain the warrant was approved at the highest levels of the department. Alice Fisher, a lawyer for Burr, noted that he called for an ethics inquiry into the stock sales once they were disclosed. She said the senator has been actively cooperating with the government's inquiry, as he said he would. From the outset, Senator Burr has been focused on an appropriate and thorough review of the facts in this matter, which will establish that his actions were appropriate, Fisher said in a statement. Trump, speaking to reporters at the White House before traveling to Pennsylvania on Thursday, said he was unaware that Burr was leaving his intelligence post. This has been Betty with the News Gazette, reading for Friday, May 15th. I look forward to reading with you again. Take care, call a friend, and have a happy day.